Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, episode 28 of season 2. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd from thehammerspeaks.com. Just a programming note, I'll be hosting Stan Saverin's show on ESPN 970 in Pittsburgh tomorrow from 10 to 12, and Dave will be a guest of mine on the show around 10:20 tomorrow. Also, thanks to Nick Rochetta for sitting in for me last Friday. Nick certainly had the nice touch of getting a Steeler victory as the Steelers basically blew out the Titans 38-17 at Heinz Field. Dave, I was there. It was a fun time. A lot of black and gold, a beautiful sunny day, and a really nice, solid all-around Steeler performance.
It most definitely was, and we saw areas of improvement, in the portions of the game that we've been lacking in. And, it was definitely a great win. There was a lot to be excited about. You know, got off to a rocky start there. But, I was glad to hear you were there. Was it as hot as it seemed like it might be for an October day in Pittsburgh?
It was 80 degrees in Pittsburgh. And I'll tell you, folks had their cold beers and they had their terrible towels. And it was Breast Cancer Week, as I know you know in the NFL. So a lot of pink towels going with it. And, you know, you think about going to games and a lot of people, and, you know, I've said this at times too, and I've written about it. The experience at home now is so good in terms of all the camera angles. You don't always get the broadcasting crew that you want, but you get to see a lot of stuff that you don't get to see at the game. But I'll tell you, when you go to Heinz Field on a Sunday afternoon on a day like that where the crowd's pumped up, a little adversity, as you said, to start the game, and then the team comes around and really plays a solid all-around game, you realize what kind of fun actually is being at the stadium. They do a little promo up on the board during the course of the game, and it's Joe Green's induction speech in Canton in the Hall of Fame, however many years ago that was, and he's standing up there, and he talks about Pittsburgh being a football town, and one of the things he said is, if you're in Pittsburgh, you need to be at the stadium at 1 o'clock on Sundays because that's where the people are. And, you know, that gets the crowd fired up and they play Renegade and do the other things they do. And that's, it's a fun thing to see. And it was a fun day yesterday.
And it looked like the crowd was really riled up. It looked more so than they were even, the first home game against the Seahawks. It really looked like there was a lot of energy in that stadium yesterday, I know the players feed off of that as well, and it's good just to get a win, get back on the winning track. A couple of these games coming up next week against Jacksonville, and then we start you have Arizona, who seems to be struggling after that, and then we get into the meat and potatoes with the Ravens and the Patriots again. So all around a good day.
Yep, no question. When you and I talked about this a couple times here in the past week or two, you looked at the schedule. And, if we just take ourselves back to April or even to August, you say, wow, coming out of the first five games, you think the Steelers are probably going to be 4-1. But there's a chance they could be 3-2. You got games at Baltimore and at Indianapolis, and you got a decent chance of losing both those games. Well, things changed a little bit as the beginning of the season unfolded with Peyton Manning not playing for Indianapolis and the Texans being a good team. And you said, okay, then you get into this part of the schedule where you've got Tennessee, which is an okay team. You've got the Jaguars, who are, potentially a very bad team in Arizona. It's a game on the road, but not a very strong team. And the fact of the matter, here we sit on October 10th. The team is 3-2. We've got some positive momentum building. You got a Jaguar team that's no good coming in. It doesn't matter that you got to play every team on your schedule, but the Steelers should blow them out. And I'm going to say that right now. And we're not going to spend a ton of time focusing on the Jaguars because there is a lot of time and things to talk about with the Steelers. And in the game yesterday, I will tell you one thing, and I know you must have felt the same way, and I talked about it on the radio show this morning, is You know, the Steelers deferred again, and I know you've written about your thoughts on that, that you think with this offense that, you know, maybe it'd be better to be having the ball. But the Titans come out, and they get a return, and the first play, they run almost the same play the Ravens ran against the Steelers in the first play against the Steelers defense this season, where Ray Rice went over the left side for 27 or 29 yards. And you saw Chris Johnson, a stretch play to the left. The Steelers have had trouble with that all year. Chris Hope gets knocked off his feet in there for Casey Hampton. The Steelers miss a couple tackles. He goes for 21 yards, and you're saying, oh, my God, we're not going to see this all day, are we?
Yeah, in fact, that was one of the first tweets I made. I watched specifically the defensive line on that first play. I had a feeling, you know, they were going to do that to start the game. And when Hope goes tumbling down off his feet, you're thinking, oh, Lord, here we go again, just as you said, because as many know, Casey Hampton was out of that game. There were several starters inactive for this game, out with injuries and all. And you were kind of wondering, you know, was Chris Hope going to be able to live up to the standard, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, to start that thing off? Well, you know, outside of that first play, I think Hoke even commented on it in his post-game talk that, you know, they looked at each other right then and said, okay, we need to get on this. And, boy, they sure did after that, because I forget how many yards. Well, let's see, there was 21 on that run, I think, and Johnson only had 30-something more, I think, you know, on the rest of his carries for the day. So
he didn't have a carry. He didn't have a carry over 5 yards after that, and his total average was something like, it was under four. So you take 21 out, and you see he's getting about 2 yards of carry on the rest of his shots.
Yeah, I think a big thing, you know, Brett Kiesel, boy, the return of him after missing two games with that sprained knee, what he can do as far as holding the point on the outside, he really looked fresh and sound as far as gap control and doing his responsibilities, let alone those long arms that he has that ended up forcing an interception in the game on a tip ball. You had Lawrence Timmons starting outside, and, you know, he was fairly quiet as far as rushing the quarterback, which is kind of expected going up against Ruse, the left tackle, which is probably a real underrated left tackle in this league. And, you know, Timmons a little bit undersized, a little bit sized, a little bit of a mismatch, but Timmons still got it done, holding the edge out there, forcing everything inside, had a few good tackles, had a pass defensed along the way, and got some pressure here and there too. So, you know, another bright spot about all this with Kiesel coming back is I firmly believe that Ziggy Hood's best side is on the left side. That's where, you know, he seems to excel at, especially last year when Aaron Smith went down, and it's good to get him back on that side. I thought he played a real solid game as far as his gap control, holding the point of attack, and we've seen this before, David, with the Steelers defense. You know, if they can stop the run, you know, right off the bat there for the most part, and let the linebackers make their plays and get good pressure on the quarterback, then the rest seems to fall in place with the defense there.
Yeah, no question. I think the point on Kiesel's one that we talked about it early in the season, and there's been a lot of talk over the last 3 or 4 years, and rightly so. No question that Aaron Smith was an underrated defensive end around the league. We know that the Steeler D-line makes a lot of the things that the linebackers can do, and they make that happen, and they don't get a lot of acknowledgement for it. But over the past couple of years, you've seen Casey Hampton make some Pro Bowls, and he's generally considered one of the top five nose tackles in the league, or certainly amongst the top 10. And Aaron Smith has gotten that recognition. But there's no question so far this year, Brett Kiesel has been the best of those three by far. He was missed last week. And a presence this week, like you said, holding the point of attack. Certainly one of the bigger plays we saw in the game was the Lamar Woodley interception, where Kiesel got his hands up and deflected that pass. And just all-around good stuff from the defensive line. Teams have been running over the left side of the Steeler defense with Smith and Woodley oftentimes this year. And Woodley certainly had his, for lack of a better term, his breakout game with the sack and a half and the interception, and just made his presence felt. That front seven, a whole different tone. And as you said, when they set the tone that they're looking for in the LeBeau scheme defense, where it's you can't run the ball against us, we're not going to let you beat us deep, then the Steeler defense is awfully effective. And after that first drive, when they bent. They certainly bent. They had chances to stuff that drive, certainly when the Titans were hurting themselves with penalties and didn't do it. I loved the fact that the Steelers came out on the kick return and ran the fake reverse, because that's the play they ran on the opening kickoff at Tennessee last year when Antonio Brown took the reverse and took it to the house and gave the Steelers an early lead that they never relinquished in that game. They run the fake reverse. The Titans obviously had watched game film. They were aware that that was a possibility, and you saw some guys on the defensive side of the ball in the kick coverage unit peel off when that fake reverse came around. And Antonio Brown is quickly proving himself, maybe not quite Devin Hester-esque in the return game, but he is a big weapon.
And not only that, you know, what he provides on the field as far as a receiver goes, teams are respecting him in the punt game too. And they punted away from him. Thank God, you know, hopefully he's not having to return a lot of kickoffs this year. And that's pretty obvious right there why we don't want that to happen. But, you know, hey, if they want to kick it out of bounds and give us good field position that way, you know, we'll take it. But, you know, he's going to get his share of those as well. You know, one interesting thing I want to ask you about on that first drive, hit unnecessary roughness by Ryan Clark after the false start there, you know.
Yep.
Do these refs need louder whistles because that never happens if you don't have the false start.
And sure, that play doesn't have – it's exactly what my brother and I turned to each other and said, you know, that play carried on for 10 seconds, and Clark – it was a dumb hit by Clark,
sure.
For sure. But,
sure.
The fact that that takes precedence over the whole sequence of events, as you said, that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I just, you know, that's the first thing that went through my head. Okay, this is basically a dead ball foul. You know, surely I don't know what they – I know it was loud in there to start the game as well.
Well, I never heard the whistle, and I never saw the flag, so I'm with you. I put that a little bit on the refs because, you know, you generally hear this – them blowing the whistle hard when something like that happens.
Yeah, or waving your hands or something, you know, doing a better job to let the players know that the play is dead, you know. But, yeah, you're right. It was a stupid penalty on Clark. And to cap off that drive at the end there, the Steelers, as you said, they were bending there. But, boy, what a nice play by Taylor and Ike Taylor and Troy Polamalu knocking that ball out, you know, in the end zone there. Ike Taylor also stretched out, I believe, one of those running plays to the side there and blew that up a key part of that. And holding them to three was a real – even though they had driven the length of field, you thinking, oh, Lord, here we go. You know, it really sent a statement. Then, as you said, Antonio Brown sets us up in real good field position, and then off we are.
There, yeah, and tell me about this, because you got to see it a lot more often than I did. I saw the replays on the screen, but usually when you see a guy like Mike Wallace, when you see any receiver in this league even think they're close to making a catch, they jump up and start tossing the imaginary red flag in the air saying, you know, I caught the ball, coach, challenge it. And what was interesting about that play is it looked to me like the linesman or side judge who waved it off was behind and downfield on the quarterback side of Wallace, so that he wouldn't have had a very good view of Wallace diving toward the middle of the field and getting his arms under that ball. And then secondly, and a guy who was further down the sideline wasn't waving it off. And then secondly, Wallace didn't come up saying, you know, I definitely caught it. And fortunately, the Steelers had enough time, because that would have put them in a punting situation around midfield right out of the start. That call gets overturned. They get the first down. They drive it down the field, and they finish with the touchdown pass to Heath Miller. But what was your take on that? And when you were watching the replays, was it clear to you that he caught it?
After seeing a replay, yeah, I think Wallace was a little demonstrative, though, after he caught it there, you know, wanting a challenge flag there. I'm trying to remember back. I normally watch the play and then move on to the next one when I'm breaking down this film and not the aftermath afterwards. But, yeah, there was some question. But, yeah, you're right. The one official was not in a good spot. You would have thought there would have been another official, though, you know, at the angle there that someone could have came in and overruled it, you know. But it, overall, you know, it wasn't a very well officiated game, I don't think. You throw on top of it that one instance on the onside's kick, where the two refs are pointing different directions as far as the possession goes.
That was funny.
That
just,
picture's
I
made
I just got confused, but
that,
yeah,
that picture's made its way around the internet all day today. But yeah, it wasn't a well officiated game in my opinion. I think they let them play for the most part, but key calls like that, you know, I think even didn't the Titans had one too that got changed. As well, you know, on a challenge there. So, you know, you hate to see that. You hate to see it become a factor in the game. But the big thing is that was a great catch by Wallace, you know, and kept the drive alive. And, the Steelers kept moving.
Yep. You know, so the Steelers, they score on their first three drives. Things look good. I think that the talk radio in Pittsburgh has been overwhelmed with, what we saw was the running game was incredibly effective. And I guess I'll defer to you here on what you've seen thus far, breaking down the tape on the offensive line play. But there's no question, if you were watching the game in any way, shape, or form, you saw holes that you haven't seen all year. And the hole that opened up for Jonathan Dwyer when you have a great photo blog of it on your site, where you take the play through its sequences and you show the blocking down from the right guard and the right tackle, Ramon Foster and Marcus Gilbert. You show how the tight ends, Miller and Johnson, peel out and peel down to make their blocks. And Ligurski comes through and takes care of his guy. And it's a drive a Mack truck through this hole that Jonathan Dwyer sees on his first carry of the season. and it's just a question. And it was funny stuff on Tunch and Wolf's show today, that Ramon Foster. It's just a question of whether he's going to get to the end zone. And Foster says, "Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, you got to make it. I don't want to run down there. You got to make it." And generally, there's no question. Mack Starks in the line had maybe the best game. Well, I'm sure they would grade out probably the best game we've seen all season. But what's your take so far on what you've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, first of all, Mack Starks, boy, this guy getting signed off the street, watched the game in a sports bar last week, three practices under his belt, didn't even get all the snaps. He got a predominant amount of snaps in practice, according to reports. There was all, you know, I posted earlier in the week, I thought Redmond probably let the cat out of the bag that Starks was going to start. You head into the game there, and because Starks was not listed as an official lineup change in the press box, the Pittsburgh press were saying, well, we don't know. You know, Scott's probably going to start. And the best thing about it is I bet the Titans really didn't know who was going to start at left tackle, which makes them have to prepare, you know, a little bit, although probably not too terribly much when you're talking about a tackle there. But, yeah, Starks played great on that left side. They were actually able to run a little bit to that side, although they don't run much to that side, period. But you mentioned the Jonathan Dwyer play. That's the staple bread and butter of the Steelers there on that counter pike, you know, type play where Ligurski or Kimo Atu, normally who's in there, he was out, of course, this game with the knee injury. Boy, what a crushing Barry that was. And you had Miller kick out on the outside fantastically. David Johnson about 5 yards downfield on a linebacker. Gilbert and Foster, of course, washing out the guys who were already pretty much had helped them anyway by slanting to the inside there. Jonathan Dwyer's eyes had to be big as saucers. David, I bet even I could have ran.
Right.
I don't think I could have beat Jonathan Babineau there with that last cut there like Dwyer did. But, yeah, overall, I thought the line played fantastic. And, you know, a lot of this, Redmond's stats are real, real deceiving. If you did not see this game and you pull these stats up, you would think that, well, what the hell happened here, you know? It doesn't look like the yards per carry were that much better and all. What really happened, you know, Redmond had 15 carries for 49 yards for a 3.3 average. But let me tell you, there was a lot of hard-earned yards in between the tackles there. And what we saw that did is that really opened up the threat of the running game and the brought play action into play as well. And we also saw Ben Roethlisberger, you know, shorten these to these 3 and 5 step drops to get the ball out quicker. something, you know, that I think all of Steeler Nation were hoping to see. I mentioned it on, you know, my keys to the game night before on that as well. But, you know, it opens up so much when you have a running back not getting negative yardage, not going down on first contact. Redmond, as we've talked about before, you know, he always falls forward. You know, he never takes, it seems like, a hit where he bounces backwards there. And that 3.3 average is just deceiving. You throw in Dwyer, who really, I think Dwyer was probably slated to get probably, you know, 5 to 7 carries at most. Well, when Redmond went out, the thing that ran through my head is, oh, crap, what's going to happen on third downs, you know? But the kid played well. He took, you know, advantage of the opportunities, and people will say, well, if you take that 76-yard run out, look at the Steelers' average. Well, you know what? You don't take those runs out. You know, look at Chris Johnson and all the runs he's broken over his career. Look at Adrian Peterson. You know, it's unfair to take those runs away from a running back, being as something was properly blocked, you know, blocked well, and the running back made it happen. So I thought it real encouraging the way Redmond hit the hole. The offensive line, I'm sure I'm halfway, about a quarter of a way through it, I guess, on grading this out, but they're grading out real well to, you know, to start things off here.
Yeah, so in Pittsburgh and talk radio, what's interesting is I think the general consensus is Redmond's stats don't look that great. You know, you just said the numbers, whatever it was, 49 yards on 15 carries, a 3.3 yard average. if Rashard Mendenhall puts up those numbers, is Steeler Nation up in arms? Because in a very unscientific poll today, the feedback was very positive on Redmond in terms of even that he should get more of the load when Rashard comes back healthy. And I think that's crazy talk. I mean, I think Rashard is your lead back, although no question that from what we've seen here early in the season, you'd like to see Ike Redmond getting more touches than he's gotten thus far.
Yeah, and let's throw Dwyer's name out of there right now. I mean, the kid had a great game, but you know, he's way down on that depth chart for a reason there. We've talked about this all summer long with him. It's the little things that when he doesn't have the ball in his hand, never question the kid with the ball in his hands. But throwing him aside there, I'm with you. I mean, this is Mendenhall's job still, okay? If anything, and I think you talked with Mike Pursuta today on your show on ESPN, was – that, you know, if anything has happened here is these guys that were forced to sit out this game have been served a little notice, you know, that, hey, we probably need to step up our game. Has Mendenhall looked fantastic through the start? No, I mean, there's times where he's dancing, he's not hitting the hole quick. I think he offers you the better ability to break the longer plays. You know, can definitely make a splash play, but he really, you know, on these plays that are designed to go inside now, there's no reason, especially if this line stays the way it is, which there's no reason to think outside of maybe Marcus Gilbert being down with his shoulder, that things should change right now. I think Kimoata is likely to miss another week, so you're going to keep Legerski at left guard, Foster at right guard. You know, just start hitting this hole, you know, better. And you're right, if Mendenhall would have put up this 15 for 49 yesterday, I'm sure there would have been a little bit different attitude in Steeler Nation, you know, because everybody likes the backup. Let's face it, David, you know, that's the way it goes. Everybody roots for the second guy, the backup quarterback, the backup running back. You know, it's just the way it is. But I think Redmond has earned more carries. I think he should be, you know, maybe spell Mendenhall a little bit. But if anything, Mendenhall is your starter, and they won't think twice now of giving him the hook if he's remains tentative.
Yeah, and I think what you said, and you've seen the same thing. The Steelers will be certainly won't be hesitant to use Jonathan Dwyer in situations if Mendenhall isn't 100% healthy this week. If Mawelde Moore isn't 100% healthy this week, there's no reason to bring him back and no reason to hurry him back against the Jaguars. Nice to see Jonathan Dwyer have success. Nice to see Isaac Redmond have some success. And I think the important thing that you noted is, you know, maybe he didn't have any of the big runs, but in the hard yards down by the goal line, falling forward, moving the pile, he did that stuff consistently. You just felt like the running game was effective, and as you taken as a whole, it was extremely effective. And as you said, those 76 yard runs, they count, and the offensive line deserves a lot of credit for that. And the guy hit the hole in the right spot, and it was a big one, and off he went down the sideline. And, that, you know, that kind of stuff wins games. But going back just back into the game and looking at some other things, certainly the Steelers special teams has been a big positive this year. Sean Sweeson in his kickoffs is getting the ball deep. The Titans have a returner this who was on the on the Pro Bowl team last year. He was coming flying out of the end zone when he brought him out, but he didn't bring them all out. Coverage was generally pretty good. Punt coverage was good. Antonio Brown has been a force, and you saw a just beautifully designed play call where the Steelers saw on tape when the Titans line up with eight in the box, single manning the gunners. Steelers having the ball at midfield for the punt on their second series. So now in the first series, we've had the overturned catch by Mike Wallace keeping it alive. And in the second series, they stall around midfield. And what a beautiful fake punt where Sepulveda finds Ryan Mundy for, I think it was a 29-yard gain. And really, you know, it's tough in a game like that to pick out one play and say this was a turning point or this was the most significant play. But that was a huge play. It set up that second drive, and 14-3 allows the Steelers to do things a little differently, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, and evidently that's Mundy's call there, too. If he goes out there, this is something that they saw on film, as you stated. Finnegan turns his back, too, and he's just hauling ass down the field there. And, you know, Mundy, you know, he sees what you just said with the number in the box, the way they evidently have liked to come after punters this year, and perfectly executed by Sepulveda. Kind of slides to his right just a little bit and hits Mundy pretty much in stride. And Mundy said, oh, I was thinking to myself, just catch it, just catch it. And that was good for 33 yards. And as you said, a key turning point there. A, you're keeping your defense off the field again. You're already up leading in the game. You're deep. You're down to the Tennessee 17-yard line. And, you know, you keep the momentum going there. And two plays later, you know, he hits Hines Ward for the touchdown, which, you know, Hines has kind of been pretty vocal the last week or two about wanting the ball. And, boy, he got it in this game. And he does what he does, you know, when he gets the ball in a short area of field. He either moves the chains or he scores a touchdown. So, and it was all set up by the threat, you know, a little bit of play action in there. I love the Antonio Brown end around there right after the fake punt, because you already have the Tennessee Titans defense, you know, kind of settled in on the sideline thinking, okay, we'll be here for a little bit where offense goes back out there. Their defense has to grab their helmets, get out on the field, and BA attacks them right away and goes with that end around for 10 yards. So I really like that play call. And then the next play, of course, was a Hines Ward touchdown.
Yeah, and we're not used to seeing Bruce Arians get lauded in the media, but he has gotten universal praise for the play calling. The thought that the Steelers wouldn't change things offensively, Ben saying and Arians saying that, you know, you're as successful as you are, you don't change what you've been doing just because you get sacked a few times or people are questioning why you're getting sacked a few times. But here they came out and he was 3- and 5-step drops most of the game, getting rid of the ball quickly, using all his receivers. We saw him even target Wesley Saunders early in the game, went to Johnson, went to Heath Miller, went to all his receivers, spreading the ball around. I think there was a small sense that he was looking a little bit more, maybe too much to Mike Wallace and even Antonio Brown. And as you said, Hines let it be known. And boy, there's nobody sniffs the goal line like Hines Ward catching that second one where he catches it, plants his feet, and basically hops over the guy in one move to the end zone. That was vintage Hines Ward.
Yeah, some of those touchdown dances, I think they're going to have to start. Boy, if this was back in the 50s or 60s, they'd have to put a little blur spot over the top of it, you know. But, yeah, it's good to see him back involved. You know, a lot of people are ready to write Hines off. I mean, he's not going to get separation from you. He does know how to run the proper routes and get proper rubs off, you know, in his routes as well. He knows how to sit down in those areas. And you hit on it, too. You know, Arians did not tell Ben to change. You know, I think Ben took it upon himself. And plus, hey, let's face it, that foot probably hurt as well. And he knew with the offensive line with Starks there, Legursky at left guard, this was the fifth different starting line that they've had in as many weeks now. You know, he's got to take some pressure off those guys. And he did by getting that ball out quick. It doesn't mean that you're giving up on the long ball. Hell, we saw it late in the game. Him go to Wallace. You're still going to have your shots to take the long ball, but we've seen these teams try to take Mike Wallace away deep, and that's opened up this, the intermediate area of the field here for these quick slants to Antonio Brown, to Mike Wallace, and all.
And Antonio Brown got a few hot reads right. They finally seem to be all on the same page, except for the crazy interception. They seem to get the hot reads right.
Yeah, there was one play on Sanders and Brown where I think he kind of irritated Ben on those two probably getting their assignments wrong there, and I think he kind of chided them for that. But for the most part, and that's, hey, let's face it, that's to be kind of expected with these two still second year. Now, it should be coming to an end here. We're halfway through their second season now, so we should be seeing less and less of those type things. But, hey, Antonio Brown, man, this guy, you put the ball in his hands, he makes things happen. And I think I saw a stat, too, and this will come out in my charting when my guys get done with the charting as far as play counts go. It seems that Sanders, of course, is getting more snaps on running downs, type situations, and Brown, of course, getting more snaps in type passing type situations. I wouldn't say one's favored more than the other, but it definitely looks like Ben has a lot more confidence in Antonio right now than he does Emmanuel, and that's for the sheer fact that look at all the work they got done in the preseason there, and Emmanuel was down with the foot injury though. So don't discount Sanders just yet and write him off, because I think he's got a lot of big catches. We got a long way to go here going forward, but yeah, you hit it on Arians. Arians could probably walk down the street and not catch hell this morning. Of course, that'll change real quick, I'm sure, the way Steeler Nation is. But a perfectly called game on his end. The interception at the end of the half there, though, I was thinking to myself, my God, just spike the damn ball,
And, yeah, I was looking for them to use the timeout there because they had the timeout, and if they spiked it, it would have been fourth down. I was like, look, use your timeout, take your shot. You got to, obviously you got to manage the clock right on the next play. But what I did, I think we all know now, if you've been watching football for longer than a week, you know that when a quarterback runs up to the line and demonstrably says he's going to spike the ball, no defender's taking the play off because guys have gotten burned on that enough now. And that's what happened there. It looked like Mike Wallace on the furthest outside just stood. Looked like one of the two inside guys, whether it was Brown or Ward, went to block. The other guy didn't really seem to know what to do, and obviously Ben threw a strike. Unfortunately, it hit whichever Titan that was square in the numbers, and thank God he didn't take it back the other way.
Yeah, Cortland Finnegan was the easiest interception he ever made right there. Ward looks like he's headed out to block, so yep. I guess he got the message of what was going to happen there, and Sanders was kind of taken off that way. Behind him, I guess he might have been the intended receiver. Mike Wallace kind of turned inside, kind of flashed inside there, but it didn't go to either one of them, and just thank God that wasn't taken back to the house. But at that point, I'm thinking, hey, you're getting the ball to start the second half here. Why not just take the three and take it to the house there, but it didn't kill us, and it was a missed opportunity, sure. They'll learn from it, and off we go into halftime.
Yeah. Now, as we run along here in the early part of this, let's, the takeaway from the game offensively is Ben, obviously, an excellent game. We talked about the O-line and the running game. The receivers did their thing. You had to love the late pass to Wallace for the touchdown. And defensively, things settled down, and we've talked for the whole time we've been doing these podcasts about how LeBeau's defense is predicated on the fact that they're going to stop the run and they're going to keep plays in front of them, and guys are going to make tackles. And the one thing, it was a nice third quarter, and you get that touchdown to make it 28-3. If you want to nitpick, it's what happened in the next 20 minutes. I do think there are some things you can point to. You had the two special teams breakdowns where you don't recover the one onside kick and you have the punt block, and they're lucky that punt block didn't get taken back, and that would have stemmed the tide, changed the tide a little bit more than it did. The other thing is, as well as the secondary played for a lot of the game, and we've talked about Gay and Keenan Lewis in particular really having won those positions and moved ahead of Bryant McFadden on the depth chart. You know, the Steelers totally blew a coverage with the safeties, and you wrote a lot about playing the dime with the two guys back there. Maybe you can tell me more about this particular play, but I think it was Nate Washington who went free in the end zone, and it was funny because Hasselbeck had been very demonstrative on, I think, the play before, kind of almost yelling at his receivers for doing something wrong, and then he had a guy break 10 yards clear on the 5-yard line, and all he had to do was throw it up there, and it's a touchdown, he didn't make a very good pass as far as I could tell. I never got a good look at a replay, and they didn't get that score. Do you remember that particular play I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. And first of all, props to LeBeau for busting out different dime looks there. Some of them, you had Troy Polamalu basically playing the inside linebacker role alongside James Ferrier. Of course, Larry Foote was off the field at that time, but you had six defensive backs on the field. Mundy went to strong safety. It really utilized what Troy does best, being down in that box, you know, playing like a fast linebacker, like a defensive back playing linebacker. On times where the people, you know, where they had the numbers split outside receiver-wise, he would split outside with him and leaving Ferrier all alone inside there. So that was something that, boy, if you know, LeBeau really had that dialed up good as far as scheming. They were in the dime a lot, especially most of the second half there when they had the Titans down. On the play that you're talking about there, I'm still not it looks like maybe it was Monday that had the blown coverage there. I don't know. Troy kind of circles back around, headed to his right, and Ferrier kind of running with him. I don't know if Hasselbeck just did that good of a job kind of looking things off. Troy might have guessed there because Mundy was way upfield, not really playing over the top, and it was almost like he had an oh crap moment, and he was the closest one, a good 15 yards away trailing the play after that ball came out, and that was should have been an easy touchdown right there. And I don't know if we'll ever know. You know, maybe someone will ask from the media this week, either Tomlin or one of the guys during the week, what happened on that play. But, Mundy doesn't see a lot of snaps on the field through these first few weeks. Maybe it was him. Maybe it was Troy guessing. So they got away with one for sure.
I had thought it was Ryan Clark, but, again, I haven't looked at the tape. And that was just my initial reaction at looking to who was positioned where on the field. And, you know, I don't want to – I think defensively things were done pretty well in this game. You talked about some of the coverage of the two deep coverage they showed. Clearly, you wrote about it, and no question, Keenan Lewis got caught on the last touchdown to Williams, where he had run with him and played him some really good man coverage against him a bunch of times when Hasselbeck started taking some shots deeper. I was really surprised on a 3rd-and-19 play that he's going to get caught looking in the backfield and get beat down the sideline, and Mundy is frozen by the look. That was a bad play. That's not a play that shouldn't happen in that situation. But I thought generally those guys played good games. But it felt like, to me, the Steelers secondary got a little bit lucky yesterday. They did a very good job of tackling. They did a good job of keeping the plays in front of them. But I thought Hasselbeck missed some guys running free in the secondary. And, you know, I haven't watched the tape, so I don't want to say I don't think Ryan Clark had a particularly good game. Troy was doing something differently, as you have pointed out here, but I don't think Mundy and Clark had particularly good games.
I wouldn't say they were bad games. You got to remember, though, too, predicated on pressure of the quarterback. If a quarterback has enough time to throw and look these guys off, he's going to make the plays. Everything with Clark, I think, was pretty much underneath him. Type bracket type coverages there. Mundy, outside of really getting looked off on that touchdown there, and I put the fault on Lewis. You can point the finger whoever you want to at right there. If Lewis keeps the type coverage that he had on him, that's got to be a perfectly thrown ball for it to be a touchdown right there. Mundy, I thought he did a fairly good job. I mean, there's a reason he's a backup strong safety and comes in basically as a reserve if either Ryan Clark or Troy has to come off the field for some reason due to injury. But, you know, I thought overall that the two of them played good, you know. So there was maybe one time where Clark probably didn't have as good a coverage. And, of course, the Monday one late, well, of course, the blown coverage. And then the one to over top of Keenan Lewis right there. Yeah, but, you mean, you're forcing quarterbacks to make those throws there, and you're counting on your defensive line to get the pressure. So, lucky, yeah, a little bit lucky, I guess. But, hey, you know, we failed to mention Ike Taylor's play in this game as well. Yeah. You know, William Gay's play. Yeah, Gay gave up, you know, three or four completions. But, boy, he had some great open field tackles on top of it and kept everything up underneath them. They had very few yards after catches. I think it was like 55 yards after catch. I counted on all those completions there and held Hasselbeck to around 50, you know, something stupid, 50, where was it here? 59% completion percentage, which is not, you know, a shutdown mode, but it sure is a good number. It's better than 62 or so like that, because those extra few plays could make a big difference in a ball game, and they only allow 5.3 yards per attempt. So, you know, yeah, is there things to be improved that we can take away from this game on defense? Absolutely. But I do like the look of that dime. I think you're going to see more of this going forward. And the question I kind of pose to you is this what you is this what you're going to have to use to beat the Patriots this year, to beat the Ravens this year?
No question that that's got to be one of their thoughts. If you watch the Patriots again yesterday, well, Wes Welker is, you know, virtually uncoverable. They used the two tight ends, Gronkowski and Hernandez. This is something that the Steelers, you know, they have to be aware of that stuff. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of different looks they present. And presenting this now certainly suggests that it's something that another team is going to have to prepare for, doing these different things. And, you know, all along, I think you and I are of like mind that generally we like having Troy be able to be down in the box.
Amen.
Don't love him. What's that?
Hey, I said amen.
Yeah, like having him have that flexibility. You know, if he wants to put pressure on the quarterback, if he wants to run around there in the backfield and try to make plays, I think that makes that defense much more dangerous. And, you know, so, you know, oftentimes, as you said, you have a different formation that allows the Steelers to not get burned or have a little more safety, pun intended, in that secondary with the vertical routes that tight ends might run or whomever might run against them. Overall,
well, let me ask you this. You know, when you have a Gronkowski, I mean, let's face it, William Gay is not going to get the accolades this year, despite playing fairly good through these first five games. And it's a mismatch anyway if you have Gronkowski or Hernandez, if you have him covering him with a quarterback like Tom Brady. We saw what happened last year on it. Even when Gay had good coverage, it got whistled right by his ear hole there. Would you rather have Troy, you know, lined up kind of in that slot there as a dime covering him? I mean, to me, that's the way you got to go, especially against the Ravens, too, who look like they really know how to use these pass-catching tight ends of theirs going forward as well.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, I'll have to think about that some more, but it's a key question. And you know, I think the good thing we've taken out of some of these games that we saw yesterday is Green Bay is the class of the league, and there might not be a team that's in next in class. Steeler fans need to remember this Titans team in Tennessee is the team that took apart the Ravens. They really manhandled them in a 26-13 game. It's the only bad game the Ravens have played. Maybe the Ravens, who were off this week, are seen as being the number two class of the AFC, but we've seen the Jets really falter. The Bills getting another nice win yesterday against the Eagles in the NFC. You've seen Atlanta and Philadelphia have a lot of trouble coming out of the blocks. So there are teams that are perceived to be good teams who are having trouble. And the thing that I think you can take great solace in if you're a Steelers fan is your quarterback is among the elite quarterbacks in the game, and he seems to have found his rhythm. The defense knows what it needs to do to get things done, and it's not quite so easy as to say play better, but we generally assume they're capable of playing better. And Dave, a little note that Mike Prosciutto also threw in this morning that I hadn't heard, that he said Steeler coaches are ecstatic with the play they've seen in practice out of Curtis Brown and Cortez Allen. They really like these kids. And in fact, Mike Prosciutto said they like him enough that he expects to see them on the field in situations as the season moves on.
Well, that's I don't know. It's one of those I'll believe when I see it, because usually these cornerbacks, they usually take time with them, to learn this defense and all the intricacies involved in it. I'm not doubting it, but hey, you've got McFadden back healthy, who can serve as the backup role. And hey, props to you on this. You nailed this a while ago. This guy is not going to be starting anytime soon. I guess the key becomes now is if, the way Keenan Lewis appears to be have turned the corner more so than he ever has, except for a few bonehead, mistakes there, which can get you killed and cost you seven, is you would think, okay, well, is William Gay the guy that they're looking at maybe getting off the field to get Curtis Brown some snaps? I tell you what we need against Jacksonville is we need a good old ass kicking from the start to them so we can get these guys some snaps in the second half and all, because there's nothing like getting in-game regular season type snaps, and they were able to do that a little last year with some of these rookies in a few of those blowout games, and they haven't had the opportunity this year. So the Jacksonville and Arizona games are perfect opportunities to do just that. But outside of that, I really would be shocked to see any lineup changes to get these rookies involved the way the secondary is currently playing right now.
Yeah, it was news to me, and I generally agree. I'm passing along information from a guy who heard it straight from Steeler coaches. So I don't know if he's talking about maybe in dime situations or to give guys a breather, but I would think McFadden has just fallen on the depth chart. And if they are that high on those guys, he's a guy who could drop to being maybe from the second corner to the fifth corner or the fourth corner. Doesn't mean if they had gotten the absolute necessity game situation that he might not see the field earlier. But I would imagine reps in practice, his reps are declining. When we saw him on the kick coverage teams as one of the outside guys there, filling a role because of some injuries. But, he's a guy who's playing, and that's what they're using him for now. He did not see the field in the defensive secondary on any play that I remember seeing him out there.
Yeah, I don't. He wasn't out there as far as the defense goes. I thought, well, I'm with you. I saw him get some special teams work. Jonathan Dwyer too.
Hey. Yeah, that was funny. He was there pumping his arms up and
anything you can do, right? Hey, let's answer some of this speculation going out there. First of all, if you read in between the line on Chris Hoke's quotes after the game, sounds like maybe Casey Hampton could be down for another game with this shoulder injury. Aaron Smith, as well, who knows about this foot sprain on his. When these guys come back, you got to be impressed with the way Chris Hoke played yesterday. I'm in no way suggesting that he's going to be your starting nose tackle, especially the amount of money that you're paying Casey Hampton right now. But, hey, I mean, you really got to think about getting these guys more snaps. I think Hoke's definitely earned a little bit more. Not that the Steelers have been playing a whole lot of base defense when they're up in games, but early on in the games, at least you got these guys you can turn to. And outside of everybody clamoring to get Redmond in there as the starter and all, this is something else that kind of turns your head a little bit, the way Hampton's kind of suffered. And who knows, maybe the injury has a little bit to play with with him protecting his body against some of these cuts and all like that. But it's definitely, I guess what I'm getting at here is we cannot under appreciate the game we got out of Chris Hoke, Ziggy Hood, and Brett Kiesel yesterday.
Yeah, really good stuff all around. And we'll get into this maybe when we have some other time. But one of the things that is certainly going to happen, looking way down the road, is we're not going to see some of these guys back next year. And not that this was in any way designed to be kind of a final tour, a victory tour, but cap money is going to open up for the Steelers in a big way if some of these guys aren't back next year. Dave, in terms of big picture wrapping things up, any particular guys' performance that maybe we didn't acknowledge or overlooked?
I think Max Starks, boy, you can't say enough about him. Can't say enough about Chris Hoke and the game he played. The running of Redmond was absolutely fantastic as well. And Ben, I think we kind of take some of this stuff for granted. Five touchdowns in a game, that's nothing to sneeze about. Only two other quarterbacks, Mark Malone and Terry Bradshaw, and, of course, Ben before have been able to accomplish this for the Steelers. So, that's the biggest thing I take away. It was good to see James Ferrier have a better game as well. Woodley, boy, he leads the team in interceptions now,
I'm totally with you on Ferrier and Woodley, the big games from them, and I agree completely with your point on Ben. I think we've come to expect good performances. Yesterday is about as workmanlike a five TD performance as you'll ever see, but he got the ball out in a hurry. You know, he missed some guys, but, you know, look, you're giving him an A grade for what he did. He got the job done. The offense put up 38 points. Kudos to him.
Yeah, and the only other thing to wrap up before we get out of here is a few of the injuries suffered yesterday.
Right.
James Ferrier had the shoulder injury, Heath Miller's shoulder, Marquise Pouncey left for a little while with that right knee, Hines Ward chest, Isaac Redman cramped up a little while. None of those are expected to be serious if you hear Tomlin talk, but of course he surprises a new injury a week on us, I think.
Yep. Marcus
Gilbert seems to be the most serious with his shoulder. I would probably think if he can't go, Jonathan Scott gets a start at right tackle. Let's hope that he kind of plays the way he did when he got into the game yesterday. And Max Starks is at left tackle to stay. And one interesting note about that is it looked like they had planned to give Max Starks several breathers throughout that game, maybe play him two series, three series, and then a series off. Well, after Gilbert went down, Scott had to go in at right tackle. It was all on Max Starks right then, and he certainly lived up to the challenge.
Yeah, and he is a guy who's well-liked in the locker room. He got the job done. He deserves, you know, all the kudos that you just mentioned. Good stuff from Max, and we'll get into more of that and the injury report. As you said, we've been surprised a few times on Tuesday, so hopefully no bad news from Mike Tomlin tomorrow, and we'll come back at you Wednesday with episode 29. Dave, is that about it?
Yep, that's got it.
All right, you've been listening to the Terrible Podcast. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. Dave is at Steelers Depot, his site, SteelersDepot.com, and you can follow me at Hammer Speaks. And if you get this tonight, we'll be on the radio tomorrow on ESPN 970 Pittsburgh, 1020. Dave will be with me on Savern on Sports. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.